You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
This weekend, Australians will be heading to the polls to have their say as to who should be the next Prime Minister. The two big players are the Liberal National Coalition with Scott Morrison at the helm and Anthony Albanese with the Australian Labor Party. I spoke to Professor Jennifer Curtin from the University of Auckland about what we should expect from this year's election. So from what I've seen, Australians don't have much trust in Scott Morrison, but they also don't feel particularly inspired by Anthony Albanese either. Is this an election where the minor parties will be the kingmakers?
It's quite possible that small parties, but also independents, could hold the balance of power in the lower house and in the Senate in the Australian election on Saturday. I think where the challenge is for both parties is that some of those minor parties will be quite populist and single-issue focused on the one hand, whereas some of the independents are looking to take safe seats off the Liberal Party in urban areas where climate change has become a really critical issue for across the left-right spectrum. And people are, some voters are really tired of waiting for the current Liberal National Party that's in government to step up on reducing emissions and moving away from coal.
Yeah, so on that topic of independence, are you able to explain what a teal independent or a blue-green independent is and the impact they may have on the selection?
Sure. So the Australian electoral system is quite different to New Zealand's, and also they have compulsory voting. So what that means is their system is preferential. So when you go into the polling booth, you don't just vote for one candidate, you vote for your preferred candidate, and then you vote two, three, four down a list of candidates. And so what happens with these independents, the teal independents, is they're standing, most of them are standing in what we would think of as centre-right conservative electorates, quite upper middle class, reasonably wealthy suburbs. Where traditionally these go to the Liberal Party, and they're standing largely on climate issues, but what they're also, a lot of them are women, a lot of them are being funded by and supported by quite well-heeled upper echelons of the Liberal Party who want to see change. And also want to see a different kind of gender politics actually happening in Australia, because we've seen a lot of quite toxic issues happen in the Parliament in Australia in the last term, with very little responsiveness coming from the current government.
Prior to Scott Morrison being elected, the Liberal Party was struggling to see out a full term with their leaders. Scott Morrison has had a few public scandals and gaffes, so how has he lasted this long?
Well, partly because they really didn't want to change their leader again, right? And he was seen as, before COVID, he was seen as quite popular. It was considered his miracle election in 2019. He is a version of a fundamentalist Christian himself. He is does do well in marketing himself as a sort of everyman and able to engage. But where he lost favour was by being overseas during the bushfires, by being really slow in rolling out the vaccines and also rat tests, and by playing the states, state governments off against each other during COVID. And also we've seen wage stagflation there, so the cost of living crisis is really starting to hit. So there's sort of a range of incidents that he hasn't really handled particularly well. And also we have to remember that the Liberal National Coalition government has been in power for quite a few terms now, and so many voters will be ready for a change. What that change will look like, we won't really know until Sunday morning.
A big conversation in the Australian political sphere at the moment is the practice of pork barrelling. Are you able to explain what this is and how we've seen it in practice recently?
Sure. So this is the idea. Well, in Australia, what the election comes down to, and what New Zealand used to look like actually before we moved to mixed member proportional, is that there are a lot of seats that are safe seats that will always go Labor or always go Liberal or National. And those seats are considered, because they're safe, at election time they don't get a lot of attention, which is partly why independents in rural Australia are also on the rise. But that aside, what then that means is that there are about 25 to 30 seats that are on really small margins, and what we think of as a small margin is under 5%. That's what they're held by. And what ends up happening is during election campaigns and leading up to that, the campaign period, quite often governments, sitting governments, will pour a lot of money into infrastructure projects or very targeted projects that are just taken up in those marginal seats to try and secure them for the election. And usually it's able to be done mostly by the government because they have a handle on that they can do this before the election gets called, and they can do it at budget time and so on. So it's not considered corrupt necessarily, but it is the idea of pork barreling is that they're trying to shore up through the fact that they control the government's coffers certain seats that they need to win in advance of going to the campaign.
As you said before, similar to New Zealand, Australia is too facing rising costs of living. Do you think this will be the most decisive issue in this election?
Well, there are some soft... There's been a lot of advance voting. So some people have already made that decision, their decision, and we know that a large percentage of voters will... not a sizable majority, but say around 60% are what we call party identifiers. So that means they're already likely to line up with either parties on the left or parties on the right. So what's going to happen now in terms of cost of living is really those voters that are still trying to make up their minds. And what we've seen in the last couple of days is that the issue of wages in particular and wage stagflation has been really important in the debate and in the conversations in the press, because we know that Albanese, so the Labor Party leader, is committed to raising the minimum wage by anything up to 5%, whereas the Liberal Party has been focusing more on tax cuts, and people are a little bit concerned that tax cuts alone won't be able to enable Australians to be able to cope with the cost of living crisis and fuel costs and rental and housing prices, all the same issues that we're seeing here actually.
The two major parties as well have said that they will continue to back new coal and gas projects. How do you think these stances will impact the way that young people choose to vote?
This is a challenging one, really, for Australia in a way that I think sometimes in New Zealand we don't understand, and it's because their minerals industry is what keeps their economy often so wealthy in times that are difficult for other economies that don't have that kind of resource. But we know that young voters are really concerned about coal and about climate more generally, but also about the short-term focus of many government promises that instead of looking, they're not looking sufficiently intergenerationally into the future. So I think how this will play out is that the Greens' vote share could increase, and while that might still mean that they only have one House seat, they could increase their share of seats in the Senate, which has the capacity to both block legislation and budget bills, but also to raise their own bills and so on. So there's an opportunity for the Greens there. I think the challenge for Labor on this is that they want to go greener. They want to be seen as being more progressive on environment than the Liberals. But they also know that a lot of those who work in mining industries are blue-collar workers who they need to win back, particularly in the Queensland seats, if they're going to form a government. So it's a little bit of a no-win at the moment, but if they win government, then they might be able to do things that they haven't talked about during the campaign that are more progressive.
That was Professor Jennifer Curtin from the University of Auckland speaking about this weekend's Australian federal election.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.